Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He dives, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. On this Thursday, February the 8th, I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett, alongside Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider, for the South Bend Tribune. Coming up on the program this evening, Notre Dame football trying to improve themselves in the month of November. You'll also hear from Notre Dame running back coach Autry Denson, bottom of this hour, an IndyInsider.com recruiting update with Tyler James. My five question of the day. Since we're moving on to 2019, the biggest needs for Notre Dame football in that class. Next hour, we will give away 2 tickets to the Notre Dame-Florida State men's basketball game Saturday at 4 o'clock. Plus, a Parkwood Auto Spa Ultimate Car Wash will be given away as part of that prize package. So your chance to win the coupon and the basketball tickets for Notre Dame-Florida State coming up next hour here on WSBT Radio. You'll hear from Fighting Irish head coach Brian Kelly. We're going to replay Eric's one-on-one with the head coach of the Fighting Irish next hour. In about an hour and a half, Tom Uziak, minor league correspondent for the Cubs Den, will join us. We'll focus on middle infielders in the Cubs system. Who is on the rise? Gleyber Torres, of course, gone over a year ago. So who is the new up-and-comer? We'll talk to Tom about that. And we'll get into a little bit more about Josh McDaniels and the Colts. That deal not happening. Josh decided to go back to the New England Patriots and spurn the Colts. Colts football on WSBT Radio this fall, so we'll spend some time on that. And great work by general manager Chris Ballard. He had some very strong things to say when he had to meet the media when the press conference did not happen yesterday. A couple of notes as we start the program. Notre Dame basketball coach Mike Bray met the media just about an hour and a half ago. An update on DJ Harvey. While we were doing the media session, we saw DJ out there in practice clothes. He was taking jump shots. He was moving around. He wasn't running or jogging, but he was just taking jump shots. And the update from Mike Bray is he's got his fingers crossed that DJ Harvey might be back a week from Saturday at Boston College. He's been dealing with a bone bruise to the knee, and Harvey has been out for some time now, and there is hope he could be back a week from Saturday when the Irish play at Boston College. He's been doing 5-on-0 drills, so that's basically just 5 guys running the offense without any defense up against him. He's been doing shooting drills, and Mike is hoping they can ramp him up maybe today, tomorrow, or as the week goes on. But there is hope that DJ Harvey could be back for the Irish a week from Saturday at Boston College. And this story that has come out of the Albuquerque Journal. I'll read from their story that they posted just a little bit ago. The University of New Mexico announced today it is suspending head football coach Bob Davey for 30 days in the wake of a new report from an outside investigator. A Chicago law firm hired by New Mexico says it could not conclude that football coaches or staff have obstructed with criminal investigations or misconduct cases involving players based on its review of 3 incidents, according to newly released documents. But the firm is recommending leadership, quote, take strong action to ensure that the university does not and will not, in any aspect of the university's program, including athletics, tolerate sexual harassment, sexual assault, physical abuse, or other prohibited misconduct against students, end quote. Bob Davey and New Mexico will be in South Bend next year, and the former Irish head coach will be sitting on the sideline for 30 days.
And you mean, when you say next year, you mean 2019?
2019, yes. Right, I'm sorry, we're in the midst of changing our terminology as we move to 2018. I'm already in 2018 mode, so next year is 2019. Yeah. But thank you. I appreciate that. I'm already 18 seasons arrived, right? We've had signing day.
That's right.
Spring practice is right around the corner. So once signing day happens, next year is now this year. And 2019 is next year. All right, so Bob Davies sitting for 30 days, the former Fighting Irish head coach. Those are some of the headlines today. Let's get to the Irish in November under Brian Kelly. I know you updated the numbers. The Irish are 18-14 in November games. They were 10-1 his first 3 years. And once they went 4-0 in 2012, the Irish are 8-13 since, and they have not had a winning record in November in the last 5 years, Eric. That's, I guess, not surprising considering what's happened, but at the same time, it is surprising once you see it on a piece of paper. It's really kind of caught up with this, that the month of November, no winning records the last 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, there was some difficulty to the schedule this year, but you felt like with the new strength and conditioning program, you felt more optimistic about November, even with the difficult schedule. But, you know, Brian Kelly said it wasn't a physical wearing down. It was some emotional and mental wearing down. And, you know, that related to depth in his mind.
Brian Kelly talked about this subject yesterday during his press conference. Give a listen.
Well, when you sign 26 and maybe more, sure. I think that probably addresses, look, we need to get better from 65 to 85. That's 65th scholarship to the 85th scholarship. This will strengthen our football team at that area, which sometimes goes unnoticed in the length of your season. We have to play better football in November, and that's my job. And part of this recruiting class is going to address some of those needs in November. We play very well in September and October. I think we got close to over a 700% winning percentage in September and October. I think we're 19-13 in November, and that has to be addressed through recruiting. It has to be addressed through training, and it has to be addressed in how you work your team. And so this will be that first stage of addressing it in terms of 65 to 85.
All right, so Brian pointing to depth to help his football team. I mean, that's part of the equation. It comes down to execution, and I think this football team in 2018, which is this year, as we have established, they will be challenged from 1 to 85 in the month of November with arguably now the most challenging schedule in Division I Power 5 football.
Yeah, with all the travel and some decent opponents too, your one home game is against Florida State in the last five, so... Yes, very challenging. And again, I mean, the reason for the question was Brian Kelly went over the 25-player limit up to 27. And so basically saying, you know, if you're on scholarship, well, he said to us, if you're on scholarship in Notre Dame, it means you better be ready to roll. And so he didn't feel like he got that from everybody last year. And there was a lot of dead weight on the roster. I mean, and we're starting to see some of it transferring. Guys that just didn't develop were misses in recruiting. I feel like I'm piling on Brian Van Gorder so much because we talk about it. There were two folds to that. There was the Brian Van Gorder that wasn't a particularly good game day coordinator, which Louisville's going to find out here pretty fast. And there was the Brian Van Gorder that was indifferent to recruiting and wasn't a very good evaluator. And Notre Dame is still paying for that evaluator indifference in recruiting kind of thing. I had conversations with Mike Elko when he first got to Notre Dame, and he was stunned at Brian Van Gorder's approach to going after talent.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser on WSBT Radio. Well, the Irish are hoping they hit some home runs at the running back position in this class of 2018 because of some attrition. A couple of players dismissed from that position. You've got Josh Adams leaving early for the National Football League, so it's Dexter Williams and Tony Jones Jr. as the veteran guys. Sebo Flemster and Jameer Smith are guys joining the program. Jameer already an early enrollee, and it sounds like there could be someone on the roster that might shuffle over to the running back position. But we had the chance to talk to running back coach Autry Denson yesterday. So here's what Eric and I asked Autry, and here's what the all-time leading rusher had to say.
Autry, let's start with Sebo, a guy late in the process. What stood out about him that made him an important guy to add to this group?
Even though we got on Sebo late, we would have been blessed to sign him on the 20th early. You know, I mean, he embodies everything that we look for. You know, the faith, the family life, the academics, and the ability to make plays. So we got on him late, but he checked every box still.
And Jameer Smith, benefits of him being here early, and how would you describe his running style?
His transition, and transition not being on the football field, just his transition to, you know, student life at Notre Dame, being able to come up in the winter. So if you come up in the winter and you're from the South, it's not going to get worse than that. So that transition is important. I know that firsthand. So that'll help him a lot. And then running style is, I mean, he is a big, you know, kind of like a Tony Jones type of guy that can run, you know, big, powerful guy that can make plays in between the tackles, but also has the ability to break runs on the outside. So the advantage for him is just being here. You know, he's getting acclimated to what it means to be a Notre Dame student athlete. He's getting indoctrinated in that culture, and he'll get a chance to compete in the spring. You know, most guys, their high school, that's the loneliest part of your high school career. I'm still on campus, but I'm not a part of the team. I'm not quite at my new destination, but I'm just kind of hanging out. He won't experience that.
Coach, how do you get these two guys ready to be in the rotation? Because obviously with the numbers, you're going to need them both to be ready.
What I've tried to do a good job of, and I will continue to do that, is develop more of a culture than I develop a culture, and then I develop players within that culture. So our culture isn't going to change. Who we are as running backs is going to be the same. Our RB DNA that is up in our room, those characteristics are who we are. And now I teach to those characteristics via those guys' strengths and weaknesses, and I give them as much as they can handle, and then we'll work through their strengths. And then we'll continue to improve the deficiencies of the developments as they continue to go. But if I'm doing my job right, they'll be able to contribute in some shape, form, or fashion.
Do you feel like four, given the injuries last year, that four is enough? Have you campaigned to Brian or Chip about moving somebody else?
I'm excited, man. I'm actually not. I've been telling them it's four the hard way. That's what we're doing, man. It's four the hard way. So that's what we have. And you know what? I'm really excited about we are going to have Mick Asaph in there, one of our walk-ons, man. And I'm really excited to see how far I can get him developed in the system, how much of a contributor anywhere on our team I can get him. I just love a challenge. And we have four. That's what we have, man. And that is going to be more than enough. My faith just we'll have what we need.
With you as the running backs coach, a couple years ago, Notre Dame set a modern-day record for yards per carry. Last year, they broke the all-time record, one of Newt Rockne's teams. So you've got a lot of success going, but you have a new offensive line coach now that you're working with. What has been the chemistry like between the two of you so far?
Well, the thing is, he's new to the position, but he's not new to the building. So Quinn has been in there with us for 3 years, so there is no transition. I know who he is. He knows who I am. More importantly, he understands the culture of who our kids are and what we're trying to get done. So there hasn't been a transition. Like I said, I'm excited that it is Quinn. I'm excited to get a chance to work with him, you know, more and just continue. He's looking for the same opportunity I was looking for. He's looking to continue to build upon and surpass what our O-line has done. So it's a lot of opportunity around here. When you get intrinsically motivated young people and you mix it with opportunity, good things usually happen.
You know, Dexter last year, I think there were a lot of people in the fan base wondered why he didn't get more than 39 carries. And I realized some of that related to injury, but some of it seemed like related to maybe not having a complete skill set in terms of blitz pickup. Am I right with that and so forth?
You know what? The best part about last year is that it's last year. And so what we're going to do right now is, and my job, I am going to, and I'm determined to, and not just with Dex, but with all our guys, to make sure that they are ready to go in all facets. I don't want one-trick ponies. That's not what I train. So I train guys to be developed holistically. And some of them will come to me with a whole lot more, and some won't. So they just have to have the willingness. And the thing about Dexter is he has the willingness. And so for him being the older guy in the room, I do have a sense of urgency to make sure that he's paid his dues. He's been here. He's, you know, done it the way we wanted it to be done. So now I want to make sure I have a sense of urgency to get him in that position where he can take advantage of the opportunity. So I'm excited for him this year.
He's an interesting guy because he can go down on coverage units and tackle mm-hmm. somebody. I'm wondering what is the complete Dexter going to look like? What's his ceiling look like?
He does not have I don't put ceilings on those guys. We don't have ceilings. We are going to just keep going and keep going and keep going. And when we look up, we'll see where we're at. But there is no ceiling for Dexter.
And then with Tony, it seemed like his injury, he played probably through a lot of pain and not just being right. It seems like there's a lot of thought about that he could be a lot more than what he was able to show last year, that he could be more of a receiver, more of a blocker. What are kind of your thoughts about Tony's game in 2018?
Man, Tony's versatility is what you get excited about. He has the ability, man, to contribute in a lot of different facets. Very much like Dexter, and very much will be the same expectation of all of our guys. So you got to remember, Josh's freshman year, he was our best special teams player. You know, when CJ started playing, Dexter takes that role. That is a responsibility. Tony was very important on special teams and his versatility. Sebo, Jameer, that will be the same expectation. I want my guys to be players on special teams. CJ Prosise was before he became the starter. So our job is to be the best at everything we're called to do, and we want to exceed the standard of being the best even beyond that. So we just want to go out and have fun and play football. You know, it's like Little League, man. You don't want to leave the field. So if they playing ball, we want to play ball.
Cole Kmet's obviously playing baseball for Notre Dame this year. I know Tony was, it was going around in his mind. I wonder what your conversations were with him about baseball.
You know, Tony never wanted to play baseball in college. That was more, Tony never, he didn't play and he had the opportunity. Tony was fine. I was not worried about Tony playing baseball when he got here.
And then it's going to be a different recruiting cycle this year. You had the two-stage kind of signing day, but next year you're going to have early official visits in the spring and early summer. For getting guys from the South to maybe fall in love with Notre Dame, I mean, is that a big advantage to have them up here in the spring?
I think it's too premature to – I mean, no one knows. Yeah. I mean, it's so premature. Everything is an opinion, everything an assumption. So I think this year, going through this full cycle with the spring is going to be very telling in regards to, you know, who, what, when, and how, because you just never know. I mean, at the end of the day, man, I have two older kids. Dude, they like 16, 17, and 18. Like, they – you don't know what it's going to be that's going to resonate. You know, whether it's distance, this or that, they change every single day. Yeah. You know, they could hardly remember what they did yesterday, let alone a visit from a couple months ago, or you're surprised by what they can recollect. So I think it's so premature that everybody's kind of in a wait and see to see, you know, how does it play out this first cycle? What patterns develop? You know, what trends do we see, you know, occurring? And then how does it benefit us? And how can we use it to our advantage?
Last one from me was Sebo. Did you look at him in the first stage and then say, well, we got a couple of guys already? Or did you kind of have to go start your shopping list over and kind of look who was out there?
Yeah, there was no need in the first stage because we were already, you know, we had a full complement. We were set. So you can only take so many. So once that need arose, though, then it was like, all right, we looked through the guys that were still out there. He was the best, and what we didn't want to do is just take a guy. And as I said earlier, we would have taken Sebo on the 20th, early signing day. Like, that's how much he was a fit. It was just at the time, it wasn't a need.
Autry, thanks for the visit.
Oh, no problem.
Autry Denson, Irish running back coach, a guest of Eric and I yesterday over at the Goog during the National Signing Day festivities. So, didn't really want to talk much about Dexter, the hit-and-miss season for Dexter. It's a brand-new season for Autry and his running back room. But there are some great opportunities for Dexter and Tony to take charge of this running back competition. I know the quarterbacks are going to get all the focus, but this running back competition is going to be huge because this is going to help the quarterbacks. Who's going to gain the opportunity to get a few more carries than the others? So this may not be front and center in everybody's minds, but that running back competition is going to be crucial in order to continue to build on what they had last year in that running game, which is only going to help these young quarterbacks. I shouldn't say young quarterbacks. I mean, Brandon, in terms of game experience, is young, but he's an older guy now.
Right, right. And it's weird to think that Ian Book is going to be a junior.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that's possible yet. But, yeah, inexperienced quarterbacks, running back, building depth there and building a nice rotation is going to be really important. And having to do it behind an offensive line that's kind of trying to find itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're trying to figure out who their best five are and where the pieces fit around Sam Mustipher. And Bars is going to be one of those pieces, and Hainsey and Kramer, but they could be in different spots.
Tony Jones, can he play a little baseball? Is he pretty good?
He is a good, very good baseball player. He told me he was very good, and he told me he had it in the back of his mind. He was thinking about it, so...
Obviously, he hadn't told Autry.
Maybe he didn't want to force the issue with Autry.
No question. Eric and Darren with you, 26 minutes after the top of the hour. Coming up next, Tyler James, Fighting Irish football recruiting insider for the South Bend Tribune, stops by for his weekly visit. Good timing with signing day yesterday, and now we're moving ahead to 2019. That conversation is coming up next. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT.
Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat continues on 96.1 FM WSBT with the NDInsider.com recruiting update. Here's Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and the South Bend Tribune's Fighting Irish football recruiting insider, Tyler James.
Busy day for Tyler yesterday, writing, chatting, asking questions, all in the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com. Tyler is the Fighting Irish football recruiting insider for the South Bend Tribune. He joins us every Thursday at 5:30, and he joins us right now post-National Signing Day, and I guess we're looking ahead now to the class of 2019. Well, many times, Tyler, on National Signing Day, we need the soap theme. But actually, it was not a day in which there was a lot of bad drama for Brian Kelly and his staff. It was all good drama as they signed six, they flipped five, and it was really interesting. While Brian Kelly was at the podium, I was sitting in the middle of the Goog, and I heard some ruckus above me, and a lot of the staff were high-fiving and smiling because they got the word that Noah Boykin had decided to go to the University of Notre Dame. So I got to start with him. There was such a reaction from the staff. This is a four-star corner. What makes him such a great addition to this class?
I think, obviously, cornerback has been a need, and they were able to get a number of cornerbacks in this class and address that need. But Noah is certainly a guy that... maybe as talented as a cornerback as any of them. I know Houston Griffith certainly by ranking would be in that conversation, but there's obviously been a debate whether he's a better safety than a cornerback. But Noah Boykin is a four-star cornerback with good size. He comes from a school that Notre Dame doesn't typically recruit at, so I think there were some doubts whether or not they would be able to pull that kind of a recruitment off. And I think it was partially because of just the surprise factor. I think they generally weren't sure coming into yesterday whether or not he was going to come to Notre Dame. And like we heard Todd Light speak to us at the Goog before his decision even came, and usually the coaches wait till after all their guys sign to try and talk to us. So I think there was that much uncertainty going into yesterday, and to be able to win that recruitment, certainly after it seemed within the last few days that he would either be heading to maybe Florida or Virginia, was a big-time get for Notre Dame and one of the bigger surprises on signing day in the last few recent years.
Tyler, I know somehow I got pulled into it on Twitter, but I know that you were going back and forth with somebody about five stars and the significance of five stars or the lack of them in a class. Do you feel like this can be a building block class, a building block to something good without a five-star recruit in it?
Yeah, I think so. And one of the things that I think that started the conversation was someone mentioned that there were no five stars in this class. And I said, well, there's three guys that were so close to being a five star, with Houston Griffith being 10 spots away on Rivals, and Jace Dannemolola and Shane Simon being within 20 spots of a five star ranking on 24/7 Sports. So it is I don't know that you can necessarily criticize the class because it didn't have any five-star recruits. Certainly you would like to get more five-star recruits, and that is the goal. But if you're getting quality guys that are maybe just below that five-star level, some people might think they're a five-star, and certainly they can play into a five-star ranking category by the time they get to college. I think that it still is a good class, and there's still a lot of top-level talent in this class, even though there aren't necessarily five-star recruits in it.
Tyler James, IndyInsider.com recruiting update. It's not really fair to ask you to rank the wide receivers in this class from to best of the group to second best, etc., because they're different players. Lindsey is a lot different than Austin. So let me ask this question. Lawrence Keyes signs yesterday. How does he kind of fit in with the other guys already in the class?
Yeah, I think someone mentioned this to me before, and I don't remember who it was or asked me this. They might have been in the chat yesterday. That isn't Lawrence Keyes kind of similar to Braden Lindsey? And I think that it's a pretty fair statement. They're both fast guys. They're not very big receivers. But I do think Lawrence Keyes is maybe a better route runner and maybe even the best route runner of the four recruits in wide receiver recruits in this class. So I think he could do a little bit of everything. I think he could certainly play fit easily into a slot role, but I think he could play on the outside as well. Kind of a little bit similar to Michael Young, too. So I think that he won't necessarily be limited by his size in terms of where Notre Dame can play him because he is a good route runner and can create some separation. So I think that they'll be able to kind of move him around and have some versatility with him in this class.
Tyler, what surprised you most about this class, either an individual, recruiting trend, just in general, what maybe surprised you?
I think the biggest surprise is the linebacker class being able to get such quality players at the position, especially knowing that essentially there's only two linebackers that play if you're not counting the Rover on the field. So they're able to get a guy like Jack Lamb, a four-star recruit, after they already had Bo Bauer and Oviagofu in the class. That was really impressive. And then if you consider the Rover, then you get Shane Simon in the class as a guy that could challenge for early playing time. It was really impressive to be able to get to round out that linebacker class with guys like Jack Lamb and Shane Simon. Once Clark Lee joined the program, he obviously already inherited the commitments of Bo Bauer and Oviagofu. But getting all those guys to stick in this class and feel like they can find a role on this defense, which isn't necessarily linebacker heavy, although they did have four linebackers that played major roles this past year with Greer Martini, Tavon Coney, Niles Morgan, and Drew Trenkel. So it just kind of shows how what the players saw in this defense and the faith that they had that this could be a defense that worked for them as well.
So, Tyler, we knew that Luke Jones was going to sign offensive lineman, but the Irish pick up Jared Patterson. He picks the Irish over UCLA. Your thoughts on the way the Irish finished up along the offensive line, and I would assume that's a pretty good sign that recruits were okay with the message they were getting from Jeff Quinn.
Yeah, I do think so. We mentioned before whether or not it would necessarily be fair to judge Jeff Quinn on the outcome of this recruiting class, whether it was good or bad. And certainly it was more good than bad with being able to hold on to Luke Jones and adding Jarrett Patterson in the class. Certainly they would have liked to be able to close on Nicholas Petit-Frere, but Ohio State won that battle. But I think Jarrett Patterson might end up being the best offensive lineman in this class. And you talk about the other three guys were recruited by Harry Hiestand at the beginning. So certainly Brian Polian deserves a lot of credit being able to keep Jarrett Patterson's interest in Notre Dame when they didn't have an offensive line coach. He even visited before Jeff Quinn was named the offensive line coach, so they weren't able to really hook up on that visit. But Jarrett liked what Jeff Quinn was saying, and Jeff Quinn certainly wasn't giving up. But like you mentioned, he was on the phone with him late into the night, Tuesday night, making sure that they were able to sign him on Wednesday. And Jarrett is an interesting recruit. I think he could start out at tackle, maybe play some guard, and has a pretty high ceiling at the offensive line position.
You know me, Tyler, I like to, like when Josh Adams emerged, I like to point out that he was a three-star recruit. So sure. Who am I going to kind of rub the star system in somebody's face when a guy emerges or a couple of guys emerge in this class that weren't as highly rated?
Probably many.
One, I think, is Tariq Bracey, although 24/7 Sports late in the recruiting cycle moved him up to a four-star, but he was always a three-star, still a three-star on Rivals. I think he's the guy I kind of identified as a sleeper in the class, has just been a playmaker at the high school level, and I think we'll be able to do that at cornerback at Notre Dame. In terms of other three-star guys, Lawrence Keys was still a three-star on both sites, and I think he could very well have a productive career at Notre Dame. And Justin Adamola, Mike Elston sang his praises yesterday, saying that he thinks there's probably a chip on Justin's shoulder because he's kind of been overshadowed by his twin brother, who is a four-star recruit and one of the best defensive tackles in the country. But and I've been saying for a while, I think there's not that big of a difference between their two skill sets other than Justin being skinnier and a little bit shorter. I think that Justin can be able to develop into a productive defensive end here at Notre Dame, and he certainly hasn't necessarily received a ton of accolades, even though his twin brother has.
Tyler James with our IndyInsider.com recruiting update on WSBT Radio. So let me ask you back-to-back questions. As you look at this group, what is the best position group in the class of 2018?
The linebacker group. I think the linebacker group, the group that I spoke about a little bit earlier.
Okay. Quarterback's pretty good, too. There's just one. That's the unfortunate thing.
Right, yeah.
So
yeah, yeah.
Here's the one that fans want to know. The earliest impact, who do you point to? And it can be a couple of guys.
Earliest impact, I think it would be Houston Griffith. He's on campus already. Like I mentioned, he can play cornerback or safety. I think he's going to be able to find a way onto the field, whether it's in some nickel situations or working at either safety or cornerback. And then after that, I think a guy like Shane Simon will have a chance to compete early because, especially with Drew Tranquil moving inside, there's going to be some options and some opportunities at the rover position. Certainly, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah is a guy that Notre Dame seems to be pretty excited about, but he doesn't necessarily have too much of a leg up on Shane because he didn't get a play this past season. So those guys would certainly it would be a very interesting and competitive situation with those two at the rower position this coming season.
Tyler, you know, Clark Lee gets promoted to defensive coordinator after the initial signing period and into the second. What did you learn about Clark Lee as a recruiter? Because Mike Elko was really good in his 1 year here. What did you learn about Clark Lee in terms of evaluating and being a recruiter for the whole defense?
Yeah, I think there was some consistency there, so I think it's hard to necessarily draw a distinct line between the two. Obviously, he was only really the defensive coordinator for about a month or so to kind of sort through some things. But I think it was important probably for guys like DJ Brown and Noah Boykin to understand what his defense is like. I think he has certainly shown that he is a valuable recruiter in that DMV area, and those two guys coming from D.C. Notre Dame's trying to keep improving recruiting in Maryland and Virginia. So I think that those connections are helping Notre Dame out. And I think he can kind of say, look, what we did on defense last year is the same kind of thing that I want to do. So I'm looking forward to kind of get a better picture of if there are significant differences between him and Mike Elko as a recruiter and evaluator, if they have different sort of preferences and who makes the best kind of rover, who makes the best kind of safety, those kinds of things. And it should be interesting to kind of follow within the next recruiting cycle.
Well, I'm going to be asking Eric this in a couple of moments, so we'll see if your answers are similar, but as you look ahead to 2019, the position group that is the biggest need for Brian Kelly's team?
I still think you got to go with defensive end. They only were able to sign one defensive end. They were trying to get another in the class down the stretch, and weren't able to do that. But Mike Elston spoke pretty strongly that he feels like in the 2019 class, he has built relationships that could set him up to have the best defensive line class that Notre Dame has had since he's been here. So we'll see if he can follow through on that. So I think that's a big need. Certainly, I think running back still, even though they were able to get a second running back in this class, I think that is a big need as well. So those are two positions that I think are probably at the top of the priority list, but Notre Dame did a really good job with this class of addressing needs sort of across the board with this recruiting class.
Tyler, last one from me. Todd Light seemed to really struggle at the early part of this cycle, and then there was kind of some momentum and then lost momentum, and then he ended up kind of finishing kind of strong. What's your feeling about him as a recruiter?
Yeah, it's certainly been an interesting thing to track. I have to imagine some of the excitement around Noah Boykin yesterday was probably a big sense of relief and some celebration for him to kind of get over the hump and be able to pull and close on some guys that he really wants. I think that it was sort of fascinating to see the different kinds of cornerbacks that he was targeting throughout the process. One guy that they had offered throughout the process was B.J. Krim, and Notre Dame kind of moved past him once they felt better with some other guys, but he's a guy that ended up signing with Western Kentucky, so that's not necessarily a guy that you would expect Notre Dame to be targeting late in the recruiting cycle, but they were at times. So I think that we're kind of seeing him learn to recruit. I mean, he's never really done this before he got to Notre Dame, so I think he's learning his way about this, how to communicate with guys, how to best identify talent. I think he knows what it takes to be a good cornerback, but I think he's learning how to figure out how to identify those traits in high school players and identify how those guys will be able to develop and fit here at Notre Dame.
Tyler, I'm not sure. Do you want to promote something in the past or in the future at IndyInsider.com and the South Bend Tribune?
Oh, there's plenty in the past and the future to check out. So plenty of stuff from yesterday of what we covered. We'll be working on some more stories throughout the weekend, even into next week, of some of the guys that did end up in the class, talking to those guys, and maybe some big picture thing, maybe ranking where this class stacks up to some other classes that Notre Dame has signed in recent years. So plenty still to talk about if you're still interested.
Terrific job, Tyler. Seriously, outstanding work throughout the year, and of course on National Signing Day. We really appreciate the efforts you put in, that for sure, especially during these Indy Insider reports. So thank you, and, well, might as well do it again next week as we talk about 2019. It never stops, does it?
It never stops. I appreciate it, Darren. It is a little bit of a sense of relief that the signing day is over, but we'll keep on churning things out.
Very good. Tyler, thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too.
There you go. Tyler James with the latest on Fighting Irish football recruiting. It has to be a labor of love. If you're going to be a recruiting guy, you never know when the stories are going to pop up.
You know, Mike Elston told us, I don't know if you remember his quote from yesterday when I was asking him about the two-stage recruiting cycle, and he goes, well, one great thing is you're not going to get a phone call on Christmas Eve from somebody that said, I changed my mind.
That's true. It's a very good point because the first signing period was before Christmas, and then yesterday wrapped things up. 13 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Eric and Darren with you. Mike Bray Radio Show coming up at 7 o'clock tonight here on WSBT Radio. Coming up next, it is the My 5 Question of the Day. And the question is, 5 biggest needs in the class of 2019. We'll see if Eric matches up with Tyler's answer of defensive end being in the number one spot. We'll have all those answers coming up next on 96.1 FM WSBT.
One question, 5 answers. This is the My 5 Question of the Day on Michiana's Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
It's on to the class of 2019 for the Fighting Irish football program. We asked today the 5 biggest needs for Notre Dame football in that class of 2019. Eric, we begin with number 5.
Well, I'm going to go with linebackers here. We have a scholarship chart on our Indy Insider page that kind of helps you play along with this game. But you're going to lose Coney and Tranquil. Jameer Jones may end up as a defensive end at some point. And then you have Jonathan Jones, a bunch of freshmen, and a couple guys that redshirted last year. I think you need to go out and get more linebackers.
Number 4.
Specialists. Both of Notre Dame's specialists, kicker Justin Yoon and Tyler Newsom, will be in their final season of eligibility next year.
We're going through the 5 biggest needs for Notre Dame football in their class of 2019. Number 3.
Offensive tackles. You only lose Alex Bars and Sam Mustafer. You're thin in a couple areas. I still think you're a little thin at tackle and center. And it's easy to recruit. I mean, it's great to recruit those tackles and then move them to the position that you need inside. It's harder to have an inside guy and move him out to tackle.
Number 2.
Running backs. You lose Dexter Williams after this year, and then you're with Tony Jones Jr. and the 2 freshmen that you just brought in. So you're going to need more numbers there. You're going to need some quality there as well.
Five biggest needs for Notre Dame football's class of 2019. Linebacker, specialist, offensive tackle, running back, and number one.
Defensive end, you theoretically only lose Jay Hayes after this year, but to find those, if you don't have a five-star defensive end recruit, you have to kind of throw numbers at the problem and hope somebody develops, and Notre Dame needs to do some of that.
That is today's My 5 Question of the Day from Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Next, Eric has a quick update on former Irish wide receiver Kevin Stefferson. Also coming up next hour on the program, we'll play back our one-on-one with Brian Kelly from yesterday. Tom Uziak will talk Cubs prospects, and we'll get into Josh McDaniels, Indianapolis Colts. They are not together after all. That's all coming up on Sports Beat. And again, the Mike Bray Show at 7 o'clock on 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, I have kind of a notebook thing. It's looking at the mysteries of Notre Dame, most compelling mysteries of Notre Dame football going into spring football. And I address whether Brandon Wimbush should move positions for all you that keep emailing me. Mike Varell has a story on new safeties coach Terry Joseph. We have late last night's game of Ohio State's upset of Purdue. We have a fishing report, an indie hockey capsule, a wrestling advance, and much, much more.
Very good. That's all in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section. And tomorrow in the 5 o'clock hour, we'll do a couple of things, including wrapping up Eric's list of the top recruits of the Brian Kelly era, which ran in the South Bend Tribune. So we'll do that. Right now, since we have about a minute 45 left in this hour of the program, South Bend Tribune has an update on former Irish wide receiver Kevin Stefferson.
Yeah, he's been sitting in jail for about a week without bond, and he had a hearing today, and the judge denied his request to be released on bond, so he remains in custody. I believe if it's not moved, his next hearing isn't until the middle of March, so he's going to be sitting for a while. And then at that point, he can start plea bargaining or going to trial or whatever the next step is for him, because he's had five arrests and four in a very short period of time. One in 2016, and then the four here kind of in a flurry since December.
Well, let's see if some time to reflect can possibly
absolutely
put him
sometimes
on the right track.
Sometimes people have to hit rock bottom before they're ready to change.
On my Twitter account, 961 Sports Beat, today's question of the day: if you had to win one big game, which Notre Dame winter sport coach would you want coaching that team? We have about an hour left in the voting. Right now, Muffin McGraw leading with 42%, Jeff Jackson second at 32%, Mike Bray third at 26%. You can continue to vote on my Twitter account, 961 Sports Beat. We'll offer the results at the end of next hour. Eric, enjoyed it as always. We will talk to you tomorrow.
All right, sounds great.
That's Eric. Sean Stiers is with me for the 6 o'clock hour next. Again, Mike Bray radio show at 7 o'clock here on WSBT South Bend.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone! The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
6:06 on this Thursday evening, Mike Bray radio show coming up at the top of the hour. On 96.1 FM, WSBT, he's Sean, I'm Darren. Great to have you with us on this Thursday evening. What do we have coming up? We're going to replay Eric's one-on-one with Fighting Irish head football coach Brian Kelly from yesterday's National Signing Day. Tom Uziak, minor league correspondent for the Cubs Den, joins us at 6:30 to talk about middle infield prospects in the Chicago Cubs system and who might end up with the South Bend Cubs in 2018. We'll wrap up the hour focusing on Josh McDaniels spurning the Indianapolis Colts, and general manager Chris Ballard is digging in, and he is ready to find somebody new, and he had a little parting shot for McDaniels and the Patriots yesterday as he left the podium after his press conference that was supposed to introduce the Patriots offensive coordinator as their new head coach. He also talked a little bit about Andrew Luck and was very passionate talking about his injured quarterback as well. Good to have you back, first off.
Thank you, sir.
Good to have you back here in the studio. And we got some news from Mike Bray this afternoon. He'll probably talk about this on the Mike Bray radio show in about 52 minutes. DJ Harvey, who's been out a couple of weeks due to a bone bruise to the knee. Mike said today that maybe Harvey is back a week from Saturday at Boston College. He's been working out in 5-on-0 drills. He's not been live. He's been shooting the basketball while we were talking to Mike Bray this afternoon down in the pit. Harvey was shooting jump shots, so it was good to see him in a practice uniform and taking shots on the floor. So the hope is we might see Harvey a week from Saturday at Boston College. Mike did say if he's back sooner, it would be a huge surprise. And the Irish, again, have one of those 2 games in 3-day cycles, and unfortunately the second game in the 3-day cycle is on the road. The Irish, we're not done any favors by the ACC office this year, but it is what it is. And you got to beat Florida State Saturday and then head down to the Dean Dome and take your chances against a Tar Heel team that's not exactly looking mighty right now.
Harvey is like Isaiah Thomas. He's good against the air right now. But can he be good with a real body standing there? That's what they've got to find out, obviously. But you're right about that schedule, man. And it's kind of watching what I could of that Notre Dame-Boston College game a couple of days ago. Really comfortable lead, then all of a sudden it's not so comfortable, and they had to score a lot of points to get the win, but it was good that they could just get the win. I imagine they had to be as happy as they've been in a while, snapping that 7-game losing streak.
And they take on a Florida State team that's normally outstanding defensively, not as good as in past years this year. Although Florida State and Virginia, no surprise, had a low-scoring game last night down in Tallahassee, and the ACC-leading Cavaliers beat the Seminoles 59-55. So Florida State is now 17-7, 6-6 in the Atlantic Coast Conference, and it will be Notre Dame and Florida State Saturday at 4 o'clock right here on 96.1 FM WSBT. And Florida State, apparently they're going to fly in tomorrow. They're going to try to beat the snow. You pretty much have to.
Would make sense.
If they don't fly in tomorrow, they're going to be flying in on game day, which is not exactly the perfect situation.
Get up and get here as early as you can tomorrow. And by the way, bring your coat and an ice scraper if you've got it, because it's going to be vintage South Bend here, it's sounding like.
No
tomorrow.
Question. They don't want to be like Michigan going to the Big Ten tournament. Remember the plane sliding off?
Wearing their practice jerseys and all that stuff last year.
Flew into Washington, D.C. at the last second. Not exactly a good situation, but no excuses. They went out and just rolled through the Big Ten tournament.
They did.
Yep. So, Florida State coming to town early tomorrow for Saturday's game against Florida State. They're coming in early, I should say, tomorrow, because if you wait, it could get a little dicey here in South Bend. In fact, wouldn't be a bad idea to come tonight if they could.
That's absolutely right.
But if they have some rough travel, could work in the Irish's favor Saturday at 4 o'clock as they take on the Seminoles. And by the way, the game is a sellout. So the two tickets I have in my hand could be kind of valuable.
Hey,
how about that?
Very nice.
We have two tickets to go see Notre Dame and Florida State at Purcell Pavilion Saturday at 4 o'clock. And we're going to throw in something that's going to be very valuable after the snow comes through, a Parkwood Auto Spa Ultimate Car Wash Coupon. That might be worth gold right now after all the salt and the snow you're going to get off your car.
My car is pretty much covered with salt right now. No. So here when all this stuff finally melts, it's a definite hot commodity around here.
Usually every winter you get some 50-degree days just because.
Uh-huh.
But we have just been hammered and hammered and hammered and hammered. So there's almost... It's almost feel like, why do I go do this to my car? Because it's just going to get all salty once again. So maybe we'll catch a break after this small little system comes through.
I just saw, I was looking at the weather.com, and they were calling it the 2,000-mile system that's coming through here.
I know Matt Rutkin's saying now 10 to 14 inches Thursday p.m. to Friday p.m.
Buckle up. And that, just real quick, the Mishawaka is supposed to play Saturday.
Okay.
And communicating with Dean Hubbard, the athletic director at Mishawaka, Friday is obviously a big night of basketball as far as high school goes. And there are a lot of NIC games and conference games going on tomorrow. So if all this weather comes in and all these events get canceled, a lot of tomorrow's games are going to get pushed to Saturday because it's a priority to get the conference games in, obviously. So if that happens, Saturday's scheduled Mishawaka game against Wawasee is going to get pushed back a couple weeks. And we won't get into all the specifics of when until it actually happens, but there's a chance that Saturday's broadcast will move to a lovely night, I guess we should say.
And stupid me, I'm thinking today's Wednesday. So, of course, Florida State's coming in tomorrow. It's the day before the game. So that's my mistake, being a dummy. I'm thinking today's Wednesday. Today's Thursday. So, of course, they would come in. But I think they're coming in really early tomorrow to be hopefully the heavy stuff. But
you're right. I mean, tonight might even be the better bet because it is going to be snowing. It sounds like it's not a matter of if, but just when the heavy stuff comes. So.
All right, so let's take caller number 7 right now at 574-282-2696. Caller 7 wins 2 tickets to go see Notre Dame and Florida State at Purcell Pavilion Saturday at 4 o'clock, plus the Parkwood Auto Spa Ultimate Car Wash coupon. Caller 7, 574-282-2696. Also, the 78 team, the Final Four team, is going to be there. I believe 9 of the players, Coach Phelps and 2 assistants, will be on hand at Purcell Pavilion to be honored on the day that Notre Dame and Florida State square off in ACC play. Looking ahead to tomorrow, Notre Dame hockey versus Ohio State Big Ten matchup. Tomorrow at 7:35 on Z94.3 FM. If the Irish win, they are Big Ten regular season champions in their inaugural run in the Big Ten. Saturday, the two teams face off at 7:05. Standing room only tickets are available for those two games. Again, both games on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. You covered the Mishawaka basketball situation. Came in 10-7 right now, coming off a win over New Prairie earlier this week. A weird game. John Binion, the heart and soul of that Mishawaka team, scoreless in the first half. I think he had one shot in the first half.
Really?
They just would not let him shoot.
Huh.
Double and triple team.
Makes sense.
Yeah. But then he came back with 15 in the second half, and Mishawaka erased a 19-9 deficit and won going away against New Prairie.
Well, I saw New Prairie had like 12 points in the first quarter, but scored what?
They had 19 in the first quarter, and then they had a total of 12 the final
three
quarters.
That's what it was. Okay.
Their first 3 shots of the night were threes, and they made them all. I think they went 1 for their next 18 from 3.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was a great start and just kind of a rough finish for the Cougars at the Cave.
But Mishawaka, with 10 wins now, has surpassed last year's win total.
Good for them. So, they're a good, solid-looking team, and the JV doesn't look too bad watching them play New Prairie the other night as well. Interesting game of the Big Ten last night. Purdue up 14 with 10-plus minutes to go, and they cough it up. Ohio State, ranked 14th in the country, ends Purdue's winning streak, 64-63 Buckeyes. Kata Bates-Diop rebound basket with 2.8 seconds to go, put the Buckeyes in front to stay. Now both teams are 12-1 in the Big Ten Conference, and the surprise of the Big Ten, the Ohio State Buckeyes continue to win. Chris Holtmann leaves Butler for Ohio State very late in the summer, takes over a veteran team, and that's probably the key. Although a lot of veteran teams, those players seem to have everything figured out by that point of their careers and maybe hard to change. Credit to Holtmann. This veteran team has bought into his system, and here they are 12-1 in the Big Ten. They didn't panic last night. They rally, and they come back from 14 down with 10 to go against the Boilermakers, who, if they have a red flag, it might be rebounding. Couple of missed opportunities late in that game to grab a possession, and they could not grab the rebound.
Kind of looks that way, and it's just, you're right about Ohio State. It, especially with the veteran guys, like you talk about, are they going to change? Are they going to be resistant? But they've obviously bought into what's going on there, and they're doing really well right now. That's a big win for them, and if you're Purdue, obviously, you want to win the game, but now you kind of get a reset. Those winning streaks kind of sort of take on a personality of their own. Yeah, you're still sitting here in early February. You get refocused, and you've got a month plus to go and get ready and try to win a Big Ten championship and work for a number one seed in the NCAA tournament.
Sean and Darren with you. Sports Beat on WSBT Radio, brought to you by Budweiser. National Signing Day yesterday. Notre Dame added on six more players. And Eric Hansen sat down and went one-on-one with Fighting Irish head football coach Brian Kelly. And here's what they talked about.
This is Eric Hansen for WSBT Radio talking with Brian Kelly about the two-stage signing cycle this year. Notre Dame ended up with 27 signees, the 27th being Noah Boykin. Can you take us through a little bit the 11th hour of this thing? Because it seemed like he was going back and forth. He was a guy you had to flip from another class. Yeah. How this kind of came together?
Well, it required attention from myself. Coach Light had done a great job of marshaling this whole process. And Coach Joseph. Clark Lee was involved as well. But I think we had a young man who really had to decide, do I want to settle for something close to home, or do I want to reach to be great? And sometimes that's hard to do, you know, when you're 17 years old, to make that kind of leap. And so we were there much more supportive, mm-hmm. in a sense that you can do this. We will provide you with the resources to be successful here, and we are certain that this is the right decision for you. So I think that just required time. As he was ready to make that decision, he just needed to know that he had 100% support from the staff here, not just one position coach, but the head coach and the defensive coordinator too.
We talk about out-of-profile kids, and for people that don't understand that, they're schools that typically don't send students to Notre Dame.
Yes.
I think your first one committed just before you took the job, Lewis Nix. What did you learn from that experience? What have you learned from other experiences about out-of-profile kids?
Well, when they don't come from, a structured environment from an academic standpoint where they're being pushed to be the best they can be at times, where they can fail here is that they are immediately put into the same classroom as every student. It is at times, they're swimming in the deep end without a life preserver. So we have to make certain that they've got grit, that they're going to fight through adversity, that they're going to utilize the resources. So when they're out of that profile, they have to have strengths in other areas for us to take a chance with them. We've had some misses as well. I mean, you know, obviously Kevin Stefferson comes to mind, an out-of-profile school that we believed he had the right makeup, and it didn't work out that way. But we have to have many more hits for us to continue to go down that road, and we feel that Noah is one of them.
They closed a lot of the loopholes in terms of going past 25. One that they didn't close was early enrollees and being able to count backward. When did you get the sense that you thought you wanted to go over 25 with this class?
I think as we were developing through the season, the things that I saw, I needed to strengthen, as I mentioned in the press conference, 65 to 85, and those young players that we're committed to playing to help out our frontline players that are carrying a lot of the minutes, if you will, for our football team. I think I brought it up. We're a 700-plus winning percentage team in September and October, and we level off to 19 and 13 in the month of November. That's on me to figure out the things that we need to do better in November, and part of it is to strengthen that roster. So, that means you better be ready to roll if you're on scholarship at Notre Dame, because we need to count on you. There were too many players on this roster last year that were on scholarship that did not contribute in November that need to contribute.
You know, I don't think that you can win in this sense when you have a less than expected season. People think you're going to leave for some reason. If you have a better than expected season, people think you're going to leave for some reason. But I'm curious, do kids, you know, you're right now the second oldest Notre Dame coach ever. Only Lou Holtz was older when he left. And your contract would take you to be the first coach into his 60s to coach here. Do kids ask you about how much longer you're going to be here, what your future is like?
I don't get it a lot. I do get, you know, will you be here to see me graduate? And, of course, you know, I tell them that my plans are to coach only one college football team, and that's Notre Dame. I don't have an interest in coaching in the NFL. The process is different there. You don't get the relationships with the players. You can't control all the factors that I can control here. Mm-hmm. So I just answer the question honestly. I don't get it with every family, but when I do, I try to be honest with them. I'm not going to coach at another college. This is where I want to be, and the NFL game doesn't appeal to me.
I think one of the cool things about cover Notre Dame is I've got brainwashed into watching offensive linemen and watching their highlights, and I saw the Kelce kid in the Super Bowl, and I believe that's one of Jeff Quinn's proteges. Can you talk about their relationship a little bit and that development of that particular player and maybe how this translates to his new role here?
Well, Jeff was with me when he had the highest star he had was NR, not ranked, on the offensive line. And what we were able to do in terms of developing offensive linemen that were clearly not even nationally recruited players. Jason Kelce was a walk-on defensive player that we moved. Joe Staley, who's a, you know, six-time Pro Bowler, he was a tight end. And so when he had those players, he's been able to develop them into NFL players. When they weren't NFL players, he's been able to develop them into really good offensive linemen with great technique. And so we were looking for a technician. We were looking for, I think you used pivoting. I think I would like to refer to it more as maintaining the continuity of that room, a close-knit group, somebody that was really good at relationships and building those relationships and knew Notre Dame very well. And I think that's what Jeff brings. I know that when Jason just signed last year his big contract, he called his mom and dad, and he called Jeff Quinn. And so that says a lot about the relationship that he built with him.
In terms of the continuity there, obviously Jeff was around Harry for 3 years here. I mean, is he going to, does he teach similarly? Does he have similar philosophies? Do you want him to say, hey, Jeff, be who you are, put your own stamp on things? How do you kind of look at that?
Well, you know, Harry has his own style, and I don't want Jeff to be anybody but Jeff. And look, I had plenty of opportunities to hire Jeff Quinn for other roles on this staff over the time that he was here. It wasn't the right fit. I was looking for the right time and the right fit to hire him. It didn't diminish who he was as a coach in my eyes, but when you're putting together 9 and 10 staff members, it has to be the right fit. When Harry decided to move on to the NFL, this opened up an opportunity for him. This was not a preordained position. He had to go win this job in the interview process. We opened this up nationally. We had some outstanding candidates apply for this job. And so he had to go through a process. Even though I knew what he was capable of, he had to be able to sell himself and what he could do here at Notre Dame. But I think he's going to be his own man. And I got a chance to see him. You'll see a football team, an offensive line, that will fit around what Chip wants to do offensively and continue to do that. So you better be able to run the football. You better be able to pass protect, pin and pull, get out on the perimeter. And I think that the other things that he can bring to the table will be exciting for us.
You know, I think had you been able to bring Jeff with you when you came from Cincinnati, people would have been jumping up and down then. And then last year, there was kind of the narrative of, you know, some people that I've worked with in a long time, we need to change. And then you're hiring somebody that you had a past with, and people automatically say, well, wait a second, that's bad. That was, you know, I'm curious, did you anticipate the reaction, and did you care about the reaction that you got?
I don't think that I cared. I always worry about my assistant coaches, right. But I knew that what we needed, I knew that it was important to hire the best person for the job. And if our those that follow us
didn't know the relationship that I had and watched him. He was on a job interview for me for 19 years, so as well as the 3 years that he was here. So, I use the analogy of Christmas, right? You want that new gift, right? You want to open up something that you didn't know you were to get. And the things that you do need, right, like socks, you don't get too excited about socks. And I'm not trying to equate Jeff Quinn to socks, but that's how he was perceived.
Yeah.
They wanted something different because they didn't know what they wanted.
Right.
I knew what I needed for this football program.
As we look towards spring, I think a lot of us in the media have done some depth chart engineering for you, and we have moved Drew Tranquil from Rover to linebacker. Yeah. I'm wondering if that is a realistic move that you're going to explore.
That's a realistic move.
Okay. And why does that make sense? Because you have such good talent at the Rover coming on with Jeremiah, with Shane Simon, with Asmar.
It has to do with Drew Tranquil. Okay. We think he's one of our best linebackers. His instincts, his ability to follow the ball, his ability to attack downhill, his ability to play in coverage. He's a three-down linebacker. Enhances his ability to come back for a fifth year relative to his draft stock. I want to be able to, those guys that come back for that final year, I want to put them in a position where not only can they help Notre Dame, but they can help themselves as well. Rovers are, they're not going to be the first group that's going to get drafted in the NFL. But linebackers that can stay on the field for all three downs, they're very appealing.
The four players you dismissed in January, there's been some speculation that there could be recourse for one or more of them to come back. What's your stance on that? Is there a back door for any of them to come back and get reinstated?
You know, I think what we said to all of them is that, their time at Notre Dame is about their academics. But there'll be one more meeting that I have with them. I have not committed to them one way or the other, that they'd have an opportunity or that they didn't have an opportunity. So it's similar to what I mentioned earlier, is that we don't close the door, but we tell them what their status is. Their status is that they are no longer with us, but we'll sit down with them at the end because they're here academically, and we'll have one more conversation with them before they either decide to stay here or move on.
I think we've all known somebody like Kevin Stefferson where there's a lot of goodness and you want to give them chances.
Yep.
And then they hit kind of a train wreck chapter and you say, this is a cry for help. This isn't just a kid making a bad decision. From a football program standpoint, from Notre Dame standpoint, do you feel a commitment to have to reach out and get resources to get this squared away?
So Eric, it's a great question, but it's based upon whether you felt like you failed the young man. Did you provide him the resources institutionally to handle his situation? We did things here at Notre Dame I don't believe that I've ever done before to help this young man. And there comes a time where somebody has to make a choice as to whether he's going to take advantage of all those resources. So there's been times in my career where I can clearly say, you know, we failed this young man. We didn't do enough. We weren't proactive enough. In this instance, we provided him with all the resources, the institution did as well, for him to be successful, and he continued to make the choices that he did.
Eric Hansen with Brian Kelly yesterday, the head coach of the Fighting Irish. It is now 29 minutes in front of 7 o'clock. Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you. Coming up next, we shift to baseball and another look at some of the top prospects in the Chicago Cubs system who might be in South Bend in 2018. We'll ask those questions to Tom Uziak, minor league correspondent for the Cubs Den, next on WSBT.
Hi.
Thank you very much. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser continues on 96.1 FM WSBT along with Sean Steyers. I'm Darren Pritchett. It's time to learn more about the Chicago Cubs minor league system. We look ahead to the South Bend Cubs 2018 season. Back with us, Tom Uziak, minor league correspondent for the Cubs Den. You can read his work at ChicagoNow.com. And today we're focusing on middle infielders in the Chicago Cubs system. And Tom, we welcome you back to the program, and we're going to start at the major league level. Javier Baez, plays second base. Boy, spectacular at shortstop. Addison Russell coming off an injury-plagued season. There's some good backups. How is this all going to shake out, do you believe, at Wrigley Field this year?
That's going to be the big question coming into this season, how they're going to divide playing time at two positions between four players, and if you want to throw a fifth player in there, too, with Ian Happ at second base. There's a lot of innings that you have to be eating up for those five players. One of the things that you have to look at is not only the defense, but the offense that these players bring. While everybody knows how much power both Russell and Baez bring to the positions, it's interesting to note that of the Cubs' position players, Russell and Baez accounted for nearly 20% of the strikeouts. So that's... that's not what the Cubs' philosophy is supposed to be when you're supposed to be trying to grind out those at-bats, get walks, get people on base and stuff. So that's why I see perhaps maybe a few more reps at those positions going to players such as Tommy La Stella, Ben Zobrist. If Zobrist can come back from an off year and bat near where his career average is, Tommy La Stella has always had a very good stroke from the left side, too. Perhaps they can provide some more of that hitting and on-base percentage that can help sustain attacks for the Cubs.
Tom, just kind of, you mentioned Ian Happ. Do you think, based on the big two and then the other two, Zobrist and La Stella, you mentioned, do you think Happ is going to be more in the outfield this year?
I would certainly hope so. I think that's really where his future is. I think that Happ can play okay at second base, but I don't think that that's to the profile of what the Cubs are trying to do with their position players. They want to try to play premium defense out there in order to help their pitching staff. So he might get a little bit better, but I don't see him challenging to be one of the better second basemen out there. I think that his best use of his skill set is out in the outfield.
Tom, in 2015, the first time South Bend put Cub players on the field at Four Winds Field, Chesney Young and David Bodie were on that roster. Chesney was not with South Bend very long. David, I should say, had a breakout year, and he has really been on the rise ever since that particular season. How do they fit in eventually with the Cubs?
Well, I want your listeners to be very careful in what I'm saying here. What as far as both Young and Bodie, they're very good players. They're not in the same class as Russell and Baez. However, they are good enough so that the production that they would bring to the major league would not be a significant amount of drop between those other two players. Therefore, the Cubs could possibly start feeling comfortable about listening to offers for both Russell and Baez.
Are there besides Bodie and Young, are there any other high prospects at the middle infield positions?
Two that came through South Bend last year that are also going to be pushing up through the system are Zach Short and Austin Upshaw. We saw Zach Short at the beginning of the year. He showed a very good eye at the plate. When he was promoted, he still was among the league leaders in on-base percentage for the Midwest League. He also was moved around a lot when he was at South Bend. That kind of affected his defense a bit. But when he moved up to Myrtle Beach, they played him exclusively at shortstop, and he did much better at that. I expect to see Zach Short up at AA Tennessee this year. A lot of his game, he's got a lot of power. He's got a lot of speed. He needs to work more on his contact, but I see some shades of Chris Taylor in him. And we all saw how much Chris Taylor changed that Dodgers team.
We're talking to Tom Uzziak, minor league correspondent for the Cubs Den. You can read his work at chicagonow.com. Let's focus on South Bend for a moment. Once Isaac Paredes was traded from the Cubs to the Tigers, it brought a young man by the name of Aramis Ottoman to South Bend as an 18-year-old. And he had some mixed results. Very tough to be in the Midwest League at that particular age. Gleyber Torres pulled it off a few years ago. Do you expect him to return? And if you wouldn't mind, Cub fans are so used to seeing these great prospect lists. I mean, you go back to Bryant and Schwarber. I mean, the top three or four on the list were big-time prospects. Right now, Ottoman is number one. Is that a sign of a weaker system, or is Ottoman really going to blossom over the next couple of years and really deserve that type of ranking? Because right now, he's 18 years, or actually just turned 19 years old.
Right. And I think that what you're saying, it's a little bit of both, right? I do believe that Aramis Ottoman is a very good player. I think that he could blossom into becoming a very good prospect and a very good major leaguer. I don't think that he's going to be as big or flashy as a prospect as Gleyber Torres was, but I think that he has a lot of potential. It does show a little bit of weakness of the Cubs system that somebody who hasn't even played a full season of minor league ball is being considered one of the top players. So you can have both that way. But as far as defensively, I see Ottoman being among one of the best shortstops that the Cubs have. He's very smooth. He's got very good arm strength. He has very good smarts for his positions, and in talking with his assistant coach last year, Jonathan Moda, he said he's never seen a kid come up like Ottoman, who knows as much as he is does now, but still is hungry to learn more. Hmm.
Tom, who are some of the other guys we could expect to see middle infield-wise at South Bend this year?
Well, the Cubs have a couple of players that performed pretty well at Eugene. When they selected him in the 15th round this past year, they put Jared Young directly at that short season A team. They didn't have him play anywhere else, and he did okay down there. He batted .257 and had 15 RBIs and 6 stolen bases in 38 games. He was mainly played at second base. They played him once at shortstop, so we don't know for sure how well he can move around the infield, but they seem very confident with him there. Another player that you could see at South Bend is a 21-year-old by the name of Johnny Bethencourt. He's mainly an offensive player looking for a position to play. He's played at practically every position in the infield, shortstop, second base, third base. He's played a little bit of outfield. He moved over to shortstop for Eugene when Jared Young joined the team. So they tried to get their best players out on the field at the same time. He hit .272, had a .357 on-base percentage, stole 17 bases, and was Eugene's primary leadoff hitter. So he's somebody who I can see coming into South Bend and being their leadoff hitter. They may try to think a little bit out of the box coming up next year, and he may be their leadoff hitter, but he also might be at DH with the other two players, Ottoman and Young, manning the defensive positions.
Tom, as we wrap up our conversation on middle infielders, of all the prospects that have not reached the full season level yet, give me a name of a player that you're watching very closely that could turn out to be a prospect in this system.
Selected in the 14th round last year, the Cubs brought in Luis Vasquez, and he started at the Arizona Rookie League as a 17-year-old. Right now, scouts believe that Vasquez has the best infield arm out of all of the Cubs prospects.
Hmm.
That's saying an awful lot for somebody who has just come into the system. He had a little trouble offensively. He only batted .184 in 29 games, but he performed at a defensive level that some say would be at or above the Midwest League level at this time. So you're talking about a 17, 18-year-old who's already a couple levels advanced defensively.
Tom, remind our listeners where they can find your work on the internet.
They can find me at Cubs Den. That's at ChicagoNow/CubsDen. And they can also find me now at Locked On Cubs. Joined their staff, too, as well. So there'll be some articles on both sites that I have.
All right. Do a little double dipping. No problem whatsoever. Tom Uziak, you can check him out at those particular sites, and he'll join us again next Thursday as we continue to go through some of the top prospects in the Chicago Cubs system and who we might see in South Bend in 2018. Tom, thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You button up. There's going to be snow.
Yeah, you think so? You guys can have it over there. We're good here. All right. Take care, Tom.
Thank you.
You bet. That's Tom Uziak joining us. The latest on the Cubs system, looking at the middle infielders in the Chicago Cubs system. Adam is a very intriguing player. Expect to see him on opening day for the South Bend Cubs. 13 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sports Beat continues next on WSBT. I always keep hoping that forecast is going to change, but
no such luck.
It seems to be getting worse.
I know.
By the hour. Our Sports Beat Twitter question of the day on my Twitter account, 961 Sports Beat. Final results. If you had to win one big game, which Notre Dame winter sport coach would you want coaching that game? Muffin McGraw wins with 40% of the vote. Jeff Jackson second at 33%. Thank you for voting. We'll come up with another question tomorrow on my Twitter account at 961 SportsBeat. Mike Bray Radio Show coming up in 8 minutes here on WSBT Radio. Josh McDaniels, offensive coordinator, Patriots, verbally commits to become the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. The papers weren't signed. Chris Ballard came out publicly saying he's our guy. He's going to be the head coach. Join us Wednesday for the press conference. Well, Josh got a little extra something or other from New England, decided to stay put. I wonder if he's the heir apparent to Bill Belichick, if that's part of the deal.
That's the logical assumption in all this. It would seem like they're setting something up, almost like when Belichick was supposed to succeed Parcells with the Jets. But hey,
that's true.
That didn't quite happen either.
Chris Ballard, general manager of the Colts, handled the press conference beautifully, and he talked about moving on from McDaniels.
Just know this. And I talk to our players and our team about this all the time. Obstacles happen. That's what makes this league great. You know, overcoming the hard times, that's what makes football great. That's what the great lesson of football is, that it doesn't always work out or go the way we mapped it out or we planned it. But it's the mentally tough, gritty people that overcome these things that are successful. That is what we're going to be built on. That's what this city is built on. That's what this organization is built on. And you can bet we're going to get there. Unquestionably, we're going to get there.
I know today it reports Leslie Frazier of the Bills may be getting an interview. I think Dan Campbell of New Orleans. So the process continues, but quite a blow when you've been waiting all this time, waiting for the Super Bowl to get done to hire the guy, and then he backs out.
I think Frank Reich from the Eagles is supposed to be in there, too. That's an interesting. He's definitely the biggest name of all of them, but hey, might as well raid that staff. They're hot right now.
Well, this was a 20-minute press conference, but the final 30 seconds maybe was the most interesting.
Decisions. People tell people no every day. They tell people no every day. And that's his prerogative, and that's his choice. And he chose the path. He chose not to be an Indianapolis Colt. That's okay. We'll move forward.
Did Josh reached out to Mr. Irsay directly?
I don't have knowledge of that.
All right, guys.
Thank y'all.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
The rivalry is back on.
That's great. But there's a little problem. Is it a rivalry when one team has won 7 in a row against the other?
That's it.
No.
They were rivals because they played each other mostly in the AFC Championship game all the time, or at least in the playoffs. And what you're saying right there is what I agree with. The Patriots, they're still doing their thing, but with no luck and no Peyton, the Colts haven't held up their end of the bargain, so I don't know if it's necessarily a rivalry either.
They got them at the Dome in that title game, 4th and 1 from their own 20 or 30-yard line. The Patriots went for it. Other than that, Patriots have had the last laugh.
Yep.
Finally, here's Ballard talking about Andrew Luck, starting quarterback, missed all of last year, still recovering from shoulder surgery January 2017.
There's a lot of rumors. Everybody's an expert. Everybody is an expert on this right now. And all we can do is, number one, I'm going to listen to Andrew Luck, who I absolutely believe in and trust. I'm going to listen to the doctors that he is talking to and dealing with. And I'm going to listen to the guy that's training him right now. And at this point, we feel very strongly that Andrew's in a good place. He doesn't need surgery. I've not gotten that from the two doctors that he's seen here in the after the season. His strength is good. He's working on his throw motion, and he's working on his arm speed right now. He's not picked up a football, but he's throwing balls, working on arm speed. He is going to do every. He's not going to skip a step. I don't know if you know Andrew, but Andrew's not going to skip a step. He's going to do everything right to get himself ready to play.
Chris Ballard, GM of the Indianapolis Colts, Colts football on WSBT Radio this fall. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times awaiting. Grab some Buds. Mike Bray Radio Show next on WSBT.